Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous AA Meeting on Air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Steve.
Hi Steve. Hi Steve.
We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of the fellowship in who will be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. To start the sharing off this morning, Andrew, would you like to share?
Yeah, good morning. My name is Andrew and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Andrew.
My drinking started pretty much as most people's did around the age of 14, 15. I wasn't particularly interested in alcohol. It didn't have a great attraction to me, but I had grown up surrounded by it. I'd seen parents, uncles, family members, everybody else drinking. I was quite used to people being drunk. I'd seen a lot of drunkenness, and I had seen a lot of social activity involving alcohol. It seemed absolutely normal to me. I grew up thinking that this was fairly normal behaviour. By the time I was in my late teens, I'd tried a few of the drinking games. Absolutely dreadful red wine from West Auckland, which was, you know, about as tasty as napalm. Drinking card games where you got so drunk you couldn't see out of both eyes. And I swore off drinking, never to drink again until the next time. So my drinking started really in my early to mid-20s. And you know, there was nothing spectacular about it. I know now that my drinking was always problematic right from the very start, but I didn't have a clue that it was. I didn't understand alcoholism at all. All I can tell you is that right from the very start, I was able to control my drinking in a manner that I could not control it by the end of my drinking. I could have a few drinks in the early days, like everybody else could, and it seemed to be normal. Secretly, I always wanted more, and I just put that down to me being a greedy guts. I never understood that there was a compulsion and an obsession quietly growing in the background. Now that I haven't had a drink for 9 years, I can look back at those early drinking days and I can see how it slowly progressed and got worse and worse and worse, and my relationship with alcohol became more and more destructive. For a period of time, life continued, life was good. I lived like everybody else did, drank socially like everybody else did, but I found that I was the guy in the kitchen preloading before I served other people. I found that I was always ready to drink anything going. I had no preference. As long as it was alcoholic, I'd like to drink it. What I learned eventually was that I was always drinking for the effect. I always wanted the buzz. I was chasing the buzz. I wanted the escape. That's what I was after. And I was never satisfied. The idea of having one or two drinks to me was frankly just annoying. I didn't particularly want to leave early and go home. I could do that in the early days with my partner of the day. But by the time my drinking career had come to a finish, I couldn't. I was drinking round the clock. So to cut a very long and woeful story short, My drinking progressed and got worse and worse and heavier to the point where I wound up drinking round the clock. I had a major speed bump in life and I turned to the bottle ferociously. I used alcohol to get me through what was a black time, but I couldn't put it down in the finish. It had me. It absolutely had me. I still didn't know at that point that I was really an alcoholic. I didn't understand what alcoholism meant. My drinking caused me so many problems and became so destructive that something had to give. By this stage, I had lost my partner, I'd lost my business, I'd lost all my financial holdings. I was down to rags, I'd lost a huge amount of weight, and I was bat-faced crazy. I'd lost my mind. I knew that I had. So I was in a terrible state. Something had to give. I knew of Alcoholics Anonymous. Friends had encouraged me to join. By this stage, all of the people around me who loved me, who had tried to help me, were in despair themselves. What are we going to do with Andrew? I'd become the guy in the too hard basket. My drinking led me to behave in a way I would never behave if I was not drinking. My behaviour became extremely erratic, very unreliable, and at times just downright bizarre. Something had to give. I knew the axe was going to fall. I knew that my days with drinking were rapidly coming to an end. I was approaching that place where there was nowhere left to go. I knew it was coming. I just couldn't tell you exactly when it was going to happen. But the axe did fall, and for me, it fell at 5 o'clock in the morning when I fell out of bed, came to, and literally on my knees said the most sincere and earnest two-word prayer ever known to man, help me. And I got help. I believe now that any prayer said with absolute sincerity is answered. That is my personal belief. And in my case, that's what happened. And on that day, I went to an AA meeting. That day, I was so desperate for help and so desperate to stop drinking that I would have done anything. That day, I heard somebody in AA say, and it felt like they were saying it directly to me, you can leave these rooms and you need never drink again. And I was struck. Here was somebody telling me that I could leave the room and need not. Not must not. There was nothing punitive in it. There was no warning signs here. There was no threat. It was a gentle invitation. You can leave these rooms and you need not drink again. Well, I hung on to that hook, line and sinker. And I went to a meeting the next day. And then after that, I went to a meeting every day. I was in a mess. I was absolutely munted. But in the rooms, for that 1 hour a day, people welcomed me. They knew I was very ill. They knew I needed a lot of help. They knew I was speaking gibberish. But yet they told me to keep coming back. It was, for me, a life-changing experience. Since being a member of AA, I have learned many, many things. I've learned many things about what alcoholism means. I've learned many things about what it is to live with alcoholism. And I now have no shame that I am an alcoholic. For me now, my belief is it's a genetic disease. And I have to do this one day at a time by simply not picking up a drink. So, easier said than done. When in the rooms, I found that I got all the encouragement and support I needed to do this one day at a time without picking up a drink. Soon after, the obsession and the compulsion for alcohol started to leave me. I wanted it to do that. That was, for me, the most pressing point, to be free of that bondage, free of that compulsion and obsession, for me, is the greatest thing in my life. I don't belong to AA under sufferance. I belong in AA because I love the freedom it's given me in my life. I love the freedom I have in my life now. So, if anybody out there is listening and has a problem with alcohol, I can't recommend enough that you open your mind, come to an AA meeting, and just see what happens next. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. And this morning, we have members of the fellowship in sharing their experience, strength and hope about the journey of recovery from alcoholism. And to continue on with the sharing this morning, Helen, would you like to share?
Hi, yeah, my name is Helen. I'm a recovering alcoholic addict.
Hi, Helen.
Hi. So for me, experience, strength and hope. My experience was quite similar in many ways to Andrew's. I found I had my first drink probably around 13, 14 years old, and wow, you know, suddenly I was smart enough, pretty enough, tall enough, funny enough, all of those things that, you know, the super sensitive alcoholic often feels that they're, you know, not enough. And there was alcohol, and suddenly it was enough. Like many of my peers, I guess I was kind of different in that I could control it. You know, there were a few of my peers who would drink to blackout and end up throwing up and it would all get very ugly. I actually managed to control my drinking and many of my other addictions quite well, really, until probably when I had two daughters and quite close together. And obviously during the time of pregnancy, I wasn't drinking or using. Then suddenly the sort of the social life came about again, and working, and there was alcohol. And I found myself going out of an evening and thinking, no, I won't drink tonight, or maybe I'll just have one. And just found that sort of increased, and I didn't really like where that was headed. I had these two young girls, and I just didn't really want to be that person. I didn't want to be that mum. There were a couple of lines in the sand that I crossed and thought, no, I don't like where this is heading. I was at a kindergarten function, of all things, one evening, and I was put on the bar. And I thought, well, I definitely won't be drinking tonight, because, you know, I had my little girls there, and I was pouring the drinks, and I found it was, you know, one for you and one for me. And I thought, whoa, it just felt somewhat out of control. I didn't like it. The evening ended, I put my two little girls in the back of the car. I probably wasn't, I wouldn't have been drunk, but I would have been over the limit. It was only maybe a K and a half to my house, but I just didn't like where that was heading. You know, I could see that just was not going to end well. I ended up suffering from depression. My GP put me onto some meds, and, you know, you're certainly not supposed to drink alcohol when you're taking antidepressant medication. But what was I doing? I was doing an evening job where I actually thought to myself quietly, well, you know, that's good, because those evenings I won't need to drink. Sure enough, I would find myself coming home after a shift finishing about 11 o'clock and pouring myself a glass of wine. Again, these weren't really out of control behaviours. I still wasn't going into blackout. The volume was never really that much in volume. But I could see that it just wasn't going to end well. I just didn't like where it was going. The depression was getting bad. The nights that I decided that I didn't want to pick up a drink, I'd find myself there with this big glass of wine, you know, reading bedtime stories to my daughters and starting to slur at the end of it. This this made me really sad. This wasn't the person that I wanted to be. It wasn't the mother that I wanted to be to my girls. And actually ended up going to, sending myself to a psychiatrist thinking I was going a bit mad, I was going a bit bonkers, and he assured me that I wasn't bonkers at all and that perhaps I had a problem with addiction. He sent me off to CADS, which was my first port of call, really, on this journey. I filled out a questionnaire and they said, you know, do you experience any guilt and remorse? Do you, all these questions. And it's like, yes, yes. I sort of seemed to tick all these boxes. He suggested that Alcoholics Anonymous could be of benefit to me. I was kind of quite horrified. In my mind, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, was a bunch of old guys in trench coats drinking out of brown paper bags, you know. Certainly not me, you know. I certainly didn't identify with my understanding, my image of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I unwillingly dragged myself to my first meeting. I was really nervous that I'd see someone there that perhaps I knew, which, you know, is kind of crazy, isn't it? I walked in there and I didn't identify with how these people looked. I didn't identify with their rate of their drinking stories, but man, did I identify with their thinking. They all seemed to be oversensitive. They all seemed to be overthinkers. There were, you know, there's a lot of signs on the walls saying God, and I just wasn't sure how I felt about that. I just, something that night made me be open-minded. I heard what Andrew had just shared, you know, I need never drink again just for today. And those words were like, they came out of the clouds with them and an orchestra of angels. It was bizarre. It was really weird. The relief when I heard those words, you know, just for today, it's almost embarrassing how simplistic those words are. But all those little cliches that I've learnt to love in Alcoholics Anonymous have really, really saved my life. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful. I heard people share, oh, you know, I'm grateful that I'm an alcoholic. And I used to think, how could you be grateful for this horrible disease? That, you know, that the medical profession do tell us it is a disease. It is genetic. We can't do anything about it. Just as if I had diabetes, I would take insulin. You know, this is the medicine that I take for my disease. So I am grateful. I am grateful that I know why I'm so oversensitive. I am grateful that I know why I don't feel good enough, that I didn't feel like I particularly fitted in anywhere in life. I'm grateful that I have a place to come where people understand me. I get to share my experience, strength and hope. I get to have really authentic friendships and relationships now. I get to choose how I spend my life. I get the freedom from the addiction, you know, the freedom from trying to control it. I didn't have to go down to the very bottom, into the basement. I'm so grateful for that. I've been around long enough now. I'll be, you know, coming up to 15 years sober. That's a miracle. That's a miracle. I couldn't do it without my fellows. I couldn't do it without the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Those guys that wrote this program up all those years ago, I'm seriously grateful to. When I first came in and I was told, you know, things are suggested in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really like that because I am a prize know-all. I am a prize know-all, and for once in my life, I did what was perhaps because it was what was suggested and not what was told, you know. To be fair, to be free from the bondage of the insanity that was going on in my head about trying to control how much I drank, I would have done anything, you know. I would have gone and stood in the corner and done handstands or whatever you told me to do if I was going to get relief from my depression and the craziness in my head. So anyway, I did what was suggested. It was suggested that I read the big book. It was suggested that I listen, and that I listen to the similarities and not the differences when I go to meetings. It was suggested that I go to meetings. It was suggested that I stick around and I do the dishes, which I didn't do very often, but, you know, we're not all perfect, eh? It was suggested that I give my phone number, and I get phone numbers and I contact people and I reach out for help. And the miracle is I did those things that were suggested, and slowly my life got better. You know, I'm off the meds. I'm not saying that, you know, you shouldn't be on meds. I'm not advocating that at all. I'm just saying that my GP told me I needed to be on them for the rest of my life. And, you know, it's been about 8 years now that I haven't needed to. As long as I do what is suggested, you know, as long as I don't pick up that first drink, as long as I meditate, I pray to a God of my understanding. You know, that's what else the other thing I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it's not religion as such, you know, it's a spiritual program. They say that religion is for people that don't want to go to hell, and spirituality is for people who have been to hell and don't want to go back, and that is me. I don't want to go back there. So I'm a very, very grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will I'll keep coming back. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Helen.
Thanks, Helen.
Last one to wrap up the sharing this morning is Jodie. Would you like to share?
Thanks, Steve. My name's Jodie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jodie.
And thanks to the previous sharers. And, yeah, I've got similar stories there. There's a theme. I definitely grew up in a family of party people. My parents were expats and living overseas, and alcohol was definitely a huge part of our lives. And I think the first time my mother said I got drunk was when I was about 2 years old and cleaned out all the glasses from the previous night's drinking and woke up with a terrible hangover. And that was sort of one of my early childhood stories about myself. And so I'd always grown up with a feeling that alcohol was a sort of glamorous, fun, sort of part thread of life. And that's how people were having fun. I also grew up with my mother telling pretty horrific stories of her father, who was an alcoholic. And who died from the disease of alcoholism in his early 50s. And so I'd sort of grown up thinking that alcoholics were sort of bad, horrible people, but what my parents were doing was good, fun stuff. So I never really thought about it as problem drinking. And we were encouraged to sort of have a glass, you know, a few sips of wine at home. It was all sort of part of the education of becoming an adult at dinner. And so my drinking was sort of eased into. And as an adolescent, I was very self-conscious, shy, you know, fearful sort of person, quite a, you know, pensive young person, but always wanting to sort of fit in with the rest of the crowd. And so I'd find myself at, you know, parties or dinner parties, and of course I'd sort of wanted to do what everyone else was doing, but drinking to excess was, I don't know, I didn't like making a fool of myself or whatever. And in those days, you know, joints were passed around after the wine, and I'd find myself, you know, being sick and making an idiot of myself. And so I almost swore off drinking and drugging in those early days because I loathed being stupid. And so, you know, for a long time I was probably a controlled drinker, but I would definitely take hostages, and men were my hostages, partners. I was, you know, frightened, and I needed a wingman. I needed, you know, somebody out there. I always chose entertaining, smart people, and sort of hid behind them. And when I found out that, you know, my marriage was coming to an end and I was in my late 20s, early 30s, I was utterly terrified of being alone. And I really picked up alcohol seriously then, and that's when I became a pretty serious, daily drinker. And I'd come home from work, I'd drink and dial. I was into the cask Chardonnays in those days, which were pretty hideous, but it wasn't about the quality, it was about how much I could get down for the cheapest amount of money. I would drink and dial, phone up poor bloody friends who were, you know, patient enough. I'm sure they put me on speaker and just went about their business, but so I could sort of bleat away about, you know, how bloody sorry my life was, and pass out and go to bed and do it all again the next day. I got sick and tired of doing that long enough that I thought, well, if I change countries, maybe that was going to make a difference. And if I changed all my outsides, I'd feel better on the inside. And I was sort of burning a few bridges back home, so I thought, well, if I pack up everything and take myself to another country, I'll have a fresh start. Meanwhile, drinking on a daily basis, and it was, I think, looking back on it, was the only way that I had the courage to get myself out and away, and alcohol was definitely my courage to do that. And I got myself to the other side of the country, of the world, and things were going really well and things were starting to change. I was doing a course in something that I really, really loved, and finding a great crew of party people. But the hole in the soul was still there, and the frightening thing was that actually, while all these good things were happening, you know, that I still had this aching hole inside. And I tried to give up drinking before on my own, and then I'd lost a boyfriend, a job, and the fear of doing life on my own, I picked up alcohol again, bigger, stronger, harder. And that's what they say in AA, is that, you know, your drinking's doing push-ups in the background when you give up. And somebody suggested to me overseas that maybe I need help staying stopped. And they had a friend who was working a 12-step program, and that they would meet me at a AA meeting. And something in that rang true for me. And so I met this woman who took me to my first AA meeting. And it was in those rooms that I've learnt to surrender. I've learned to surrender that I need help to stay sober. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a systematic program to surrender, to clean my own house up, to, you know, take a direction. I have a sponsor. I have a home group. I have sponsees. And it's given me, you know, a life that I couldn't have imagined for myself. And I'm eternally grateful. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Jodie. You've been listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. If you've identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, and in the drop-down box is a list of all AA meetings in the Greater Auckland area and right throughout the country. In Auckland, we have over 130 meetings each week, so you'll find a list of those there. Or you can phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member, and you can have a talk to them. We'll be back here again next Sunday at 10:45 with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM, and we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.